good evening wherever you are. Thank you very much for joining us on the Just Like the Movies podcast. The winner of the coveted Beijing Flying Monkey Award. The winner of that award, of course, being the main man, Johnny. Johnny, tell everybody how you're doing today.
During the acceptance speech, I don't know if you saw it. It was televised internationally. I thanked two people. Can you guess who those two people are?
I'm drawing a blank, man. I'll admit it. I'm a little not with it today.
Right. Fran Drescher.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, I Tropic. Guess I kind of deserve that one.
Your mother.
You've never even met my mom. That's what's so funny.
I know.
We've been friends for nearly a quarter of a century. You couldn't pick my mother out of a fucking lineup. That's so funny.
No. Yeah, that's true. But sad state of affairs, because I would love to meet your mom. That'd be nice. But one day, perhaps, at your wedding.
Oh, all right, so we're going to start. If we're not even 2 minutes in, you're going to joke about my mother, then you're going to bring up the whole fucking confirmed bachelor thing. We're off to...
Well,
are we supposed to talk about a movie? What's the movie?
Well,
again?
I figured we'd start talking about women because there's zero in this cast.
Yeah, they did find a way to work in some soapies, though, so I always appreciate that. No women,
yeah,
though. The only woman, I think, was the... they had some extras, and then they had the girl from Community, right?
Yeah, so...
She was Vivica?
Yeah, what I'm seeing here, aside from, like, celebrity cameos, like you say, like, you know, Maria Menounos and, you know, that type of stuff... Amy Stiller as the script supervisor, I'm not really too sure. But I tried watching Community a few times, and everyone keeps saying it's a great show, and I always sputter out. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
Maybe the Dan Harmon formula doesn't do it for you.
I don't know. Maybe it's Chevy Chase. It could be that.
Well, he's only on there for two seasons, and then they booted him, so...
All right, so I got to get to season 3. All right, that's fine. But yeah, I like Tropic Thunder. It was a good movie.
Had you seen it? Did you have a lot of reps with it? Like, did you see it in the theater? Have you seen it a lot of times?
I was very late to this movie. I probably saw it like 5 years after it came out.
Okay.
I think I've seen it 2 or 3 times. But I have a theory, and I didn't check this against a lot of other movies, but you and I have been talking about, you know, especially we do older movies, especially usually our comedies are of the older variety too. Just based on how the climate is with how comedies are made today in like the PC world. And we don't have to get into all that, but we know that's the deal. So I was thinking about, what was this 2008? So 15, 16 years ago. I feel like there haven't been a lot of comedies made since compared to how they used to be made on the frequency. And I wonder if this was like almost one of the last movies that really pushed the envelope. Cause I know this movie for varying reasons pissed off a lot of people. You know, the Tom Cruise playing a Jewish guy, the blackface of course. And I think there was another,
the Simple Jack subplot.
The Simple Jack stuff. Right. That's the other one. Yeah. So somehow it got through all of that in 2008. Today, I don't know if it would have survived, but it would have made a lot of money because people like rebelling against people telling them they shouldn't watch things, aka why the Joker made $1 billion. But I feel like this was almost one of the last of that type because I can't think of any movies that have really pushed the envelope since the way this movie did. And I don't know that they would make this movie today, I guess, to put it that way.
Well, I know Ben Stiller agrees with you because he was talking to your boy, Howard Stern, and he said, I think he said like in 2018 even, that in the current climate that this movie couldn't get made. And I'm trying to rack my brain to be with you on the whole, like, because I think now it's like so many comedies, the newer ones are just so... They're just movies I would never see, so they just don't even stick in my head. Like, I don't go to see them in the theater. I don't check them out on home video. Like, I would be really hard-pressed to remember the newest comedy I've seen.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I know The Hangover pushed the envelope a bit, and that was a year after this. And then, of course, they had to make those sequels for it. But beyond that, I can't really think of too much that has really gone either hard R or really pushed, you know, boundaries and PC limits and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, I think it's a funny movie, and it's crazy that Robert Downey Jr. gets nominated for this.
Yeah.
Especially with how we know Hollywood pretends to care so much about everything. And then you have, you know, Jimmy Kimmel hosts the Oscars and he's done the Karl Malone stuff. So it's like, maybe they're okay with that. I don't know. But needless to say, Robert Downey Jr. has since finally won an Oscar. He didn't for this, but this has to be, all jokes aside and hyperbole, one of his best roles. Like, he carried this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think without Robert Downey Jr. as Kirk Lazarus, this is a forgotten movie. And that might be a bold statement, but
no, I don't think it is at all. And I want to give my apologies to the listeners up to this point, because we were just ragging on each other for the first 2 minutes, and it's like the topic of discussion, it was supposed to be Tropic Thunder, and it will be. But yeah. I'm interested to hear your thoughts a little more. Like, I'm glad that you were bullish on the movie, because I'm gonna peel back the curtain a little bit. I hadn't seen the movie in a long time. I remember seeing it in the theater, and I've mentioned it a few times on other episodes for tangential reasons about how I think this is a great comedy. And unfortunately, before I watched it, we got some feedback from one of our longtime correspondents, and that would be our resident Australian. And he said that he had not seen the movie, and he only watched it because we were going to be covering it, and he said he thought it was brutal. And I don't think I'm that suggestible, but then when I watched it, a lot of the stuff wasn't landing like it used to. And I was actually just trying to think of the stuff I liked more than the stuff that I did. I think I like this movie as a concept more than I like it as a comedy. I like what it was trying to do. I like that it spoofs Hollywood culture and how up its own ass it is. But I think a lot of the stuff, especially pertaining to the action comedy, it just didn't work for me as much this time. And I was like, man, this is our 84th episode. It's like, did I finally make a pick that's like so bad that I can't even back it?
I think that's going a little far. I do think that, and again, like I said, I was a little late to the party with this movie anyway, like probably like 2013-ish, about 10 years ago I saw it for the first time. And I thought it was really funny then because it just felt fresh. It felt like a fresh comedy. Like, you could look at Tropic Thunder and it's a spoof, but it's not. But it's in its own little pocket that it has its own uniqueness to it, which you got to give that enough credit as it is for that alone. And Ben Stiller as a director, you know, I like Cable Guy. I'm not sitting here saying like, oh, I know all of the movies that Ben Stiller has directed and love and hate them or whatever. But I thought it was well shot. You know, for the type of movie it is, you know, it is certainly an action movie because of all the explosions and whatnot. But, of course, its number one purpose is being a comedy. And I laughed watching this, but I don't think I laughed necessarily at stuff I laughed at the first time. And I think that's sort of feeding on what you're saying. Like, more of my focus now went to guys who I have grown to like more since I've seen it, like Bill Hader, for example. Like, he doesn't have a big role in this, but the voice he puts on for the whole movie and commits to it is so absurdly subtle that if you watch the movie for the first time, you don't know who he is. You're just like, oh, that's how that guy talks. But, you know, he's more of like a whinier type of voice. And in this one, he just really stiffens it up, like that stick up his character's ass. So, and like the Tom Cruise thing, I feel like wasn't as funny now as the hilarity it received then, because people were so shocked by it. Like, the shock value of that's gone now. So now I'm just like, oh yeah, here's the Tom Cruise scene. Okay.
Yeah. It's for me, the bright spots, I didn't mean to make it sound like this is a bad movie. I'm not saying it's bad. I just think when I was watching it, I was, out of all the movies that I picked, I was probably most disappointed with this one. I know there's ones we haven't like seen eye to eye on, like Orgasmo and RoboCop, which will be looped at my memorial service. But this one, it was just kind of like so much of the, like when I started thinking about the parts of the movie that I liked compared to the parts of the movie that I didn't like, and the a lot of the stuff just kind of dragged. Like, it's like, yeah, it's funny when you're making fun of method acting for like the first 5 minutes, and then it, then you just keep like, you just kept keep stepping on the same rake over and over and over again. It's kind of just like, and another thing I noticed when I was watching it this time was when they were like, when you think about the movie within the movie, the Tropic Thunder film, I'd like your opinion on this. Well, I always like your opinion, but I mean, I'd be interested to see if you agree or not. But do you think it was supposed to be that the way they were shooting it, that this movie was going to be a disaster no matter what? Because, like, the dialogue, like, if you've seen, like, 5 Vietnam movies, they were, like, recycling all the same cliches. The characters, even, like, there's nothing really original about them. It seemed like they just borrowed really heavily from Apocalypse Now and Platoon. And I know there's the blatant Platoon tribute shots and things like that.
Yeah. But the arms spread, yeah.
It kind of reminded me of in... which a show that I still don't know why I watched to completion, but like an Entourage, when he's making these movies and you're watching the movies within the movies and like, are these supposed to be good within the universe that it takes place in? And then when they do Medellin and it looks even worse, and then that turns out to be a flop. It's like, I was wondering if that was what they might've been going for with this movie. Like, this was just going to be another hack period, like, Vietnam movie bringing nothing fresh to the table except maybe like the gimmick of what the Kirk Lazarus character was trying to do, which didn't even seem like it was working either. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, so you mean like their initial crack at it before they like took them really into the jungle?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and I think that's sort of playing on the director, Damien Cockburn, not having enough experience, and maybe, I don't know if that was supposed, he was supposed to represent somebody that, you know, it exists in Hollywood, or, you know, maybe is he Michael Bay?
You know? No, I read that he was he was inspired by the guy who directed, The Island of Dr. Moreau, like that whole circus with Val Kilmer and like really late stage Marlon Brando.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it definitely seemed like a ridiculous movie, and just in general, I thought like Jack Black was a massive miss on this whole movie.
Couldn't agree more. I'm not really the biggest Jack Black fan anyway. For whatever that's worth, like I thought he was pretty good in High Fidelity, but when we did that way back when, yeah. I just like when I was thinking about the principal characters, I was like, I didn't really, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. is probably the bright spot of the movie. I still like the Tom Cruise stuff, even though, like you said, it definitely doesn't have the same effect that it did with him playing so radically against type. And then when you read and you see that a lot of that stuff was his idea. It's pretty cool. Like he kept saying over and over again in interviews when he got this role, he's like, they're like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, well, I want to have fat hands and I want to dance. And I know to a lot of people, like that whole, when he's like rapping and doing that whole thing, it may seem like kind of like cringy a little bit, but to me, it's just another element of this movie that where everybody in it is just a poser. Like,
yeah. I agree with you.
Cause this is like at its core, I mean, this is a really layered satire of Hollywood. And
yes.
I mean, I think if it was really biting and really, you know, like really acerbic, I don't think it would have been made. I think, I don't know, something would have happened and it would have gotten shelved. So I think it was safe enough to be released. But I mean, it sends up the studio system and method acting and like the whole, you know, like that whole cult of charity that actors try to create about how they're so philanthropic. Like,
right.
They get into all that stuff. And to think that one of the guys who wrote this was the bad guy from Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. And also Tim Bryce from American Psycho, Justin Theroux. So, and he makes a couple appearances. Like, you see him as the door gunner. That's pretty funny. But Yeah, I, like, watching it this time, it was, yeah, Robert Downey Jr., like, one of the few times I actually laughed out loud when I was rewatching, it was just that one scene where he's talking to, I can't remember who he's talking to, and he goes, he's like, just spit that shit out, man, and he's smiling, and then the smile just gives way to this confused, like, I don't, serious look, and I just, I don't know, for some reason, I was like, that is so funny, like, you know, it's... Because it's like compared to this movie, I mean, the movie, like, so much of the comedy is bombastic and over the top, and that's really understated. It's just the camera lingering on a face and just letting a talented actor kind of like create comedy that way.
Agreed. Yeah. I was trying to think, like, man, did I have a favorite part in this movie? And I'm not going to not pick a Robert Downey Jr. moment. And I was trying to think of maybe what made me laugh the hardest. And the part that stood out was when, you know, Al Pacino was giving him shit for being an Australian guy playing a black guy. And then he's like, he starts making all the cliche, the Crocodile Dundee, the shrimp and the Barbie, the dingo ate your baby thing. And then Robert Downey Jr. just starts doing the lyrics from the Jeffersons. Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we up in the big leagues. It just reminded me of like a tinge of like a Trey Parker because of the voice. But I thought that was really funny. And, you know, I remember one of the bigger moments from the trailer being the whole like, what do you mean you people? And they're like, what do you mean you people? And it's like, then I was like, oh man, that's funny. But knowing that joke so well now, I was like, meh, you know. Eh.
Yeah, some of those jokes, like once you've heard them enough times and it's just not going to work anymore. Like, I just thought that I'm with you. I think he was kind of like he kind of did what he did with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, he just carried that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I did think that I did still like the Tom Cruise stuff, though not as much. I thought I actually kind of like Matthew McConaughey's part, which was originally supposed to be Ben Stiller. And I don't know what it is with Ben Stiller, but he does that in a lot of movies that he directs. He's like he always says he wants to take a smaller part, and then he ends up taking like the main part.
Right.
Because you were telling me, like, we were just chatting very briefly before we started rolling. You said Keanu Reeves was originally supposed to play the Tug Speedman part, right?
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. Because then I was trying to like envision that. And I, you know, we both like Keanu Reeves, whether it's John Wick, Matrix, or, you know, Point Break, which, you know, we're going to obviously do at some point. But in a comedy like this, I think it would be pretty interesting because, you know, I've seen Bill and Ted and I've seen Keanu Reeves do comedy and stuff, but not something like this. And we know he's very good with action stuff, so that wouldn't have been a problem. I actually would, this would be a situation where I would love to have seen that. I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it would have all played out because it seemed like the Tug Speedman character was kind of he wasn't the straight man. Like, Jay Baruchel was the straight man. And that guy's had a pretty interesting career.
Like, yeah.
You're making
that
a face.
Guy,
tell everybody why you're making a face.
I don't know why, but you ever have actors that just like, they just annoy the shit out of you?
And like Jesse Eisenberg.
Yes, right. Ugh. And for me, it's Jay Baruchel. And I don't know if it's because he plays the same fucking guy in every movie he's in. Like a very geeky, lonely nerd who's like not the main friend, but he's one of the friends and he's very nice to everybody. Like, that's who Jay Baruchel plays in every fucking movie he's in.
And lately, even in this film, he's kind of like the outsider insider. Like, he's the Hollywood guy who isn't, you know, on the A-list. They really took it to the extreme in This Is the End, where he basically just played a cinematic version of himself, where he's like, he's still doing all the Hollywood shit, but he thinks he's like too cool for it. And like in this movie, he doesn't think he's too cool for it because he's like the utility player on the team.
Right.
To use I don't think you would begrudge me using a baseball metaphor, but
no.
He's the guy who did all the reading and went to the boot camp because Ben Stiller came up with the idea for this because he was working on Empire of the Sun, and he had friends of his that were in so, like, because they were making so many Vietnam movies between 1985 and 1990.
Oh, that's insane.
He had a lot of, he had friends who were working on those, and it kind of struck him as funny the way they would talk about going to play boot camp to play a soldier in a movie like it was real war.
Right.
So that was kind of the genesis for this whole idea, and that's originally what the concept was supposed to be. It was supposed to be actors in a boot camp and then getting PTSD, and then it kind of developed into this thing where they're actually shooting a movie, and the movie shoot gets out of hand. They end up, like, kind of going native, so to speak.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know if, I mean, you're a Bill Murray fan. There's this another spoof movie called The Man Who Knew Too Little in, like, from, like, 1997, where Bill Murray plays this sort of half-wit guy who thinks someone for, like, a present set him up on this, like, crazy adventure, but he really gets wrapped up to this real crime thing, and he thinks they're, like, playing up against him. So he's like, all right, let's do that again. Let's try that again. So this has been done before, and I'm sure that's not the only example. I bet there's, like, an even more popular one that I can't even think of where someone thinks they're in a fictional situation when it's actually very dire and they're acting oddly calm about it. So that was familiar to me for this, and I actually feel like they didn't overuse that here. Like, they were, like, mainly with Ben Stiller when he's in the POW camp and he's like, they're hitting each other and he's like, oh dude, I'm sorry. He's like, are you okay? I'm like, all right, that's good. I'll give the movie credit in that they didn't overdo that stuff too much.
Yeah,
and when they did do it,
it was mostly limited to his character, because, and then that follows the internal logic of the movie, because he needed it the most.
Right.
And I keep coming back to the Kirk Lazarus character, because the more, when I was watching it this time, I was like, man, that shit probably would have been a total disaster. Then, like, it kind of tracks in the movie because he doesn't get nominated for an Oscar in it.
Right.
Or maybe he did, but it happened off screen. I'm not sure, but they made it seem like he did, because he would have been in the supporting part, but this isn't some half-ass imaginary cinematic award show podcast. We're supposed to be talking about Tropic Thunder.
Well, and he's presenting the award, which means he won it last year for something else.
See, I didn't know that. That's something I should have known, and I didn't know that.
I don't know how long they've been doing that, but at least for the last 10 years. I mean, it could even be longer. I'm no awards show expert, but usually they get the previous year's winner to come out and give out that year's award, and he's there with his blonde hair and his blue eyes giving the award to his buddy, Tug Speedman, and his natural tears. Now, do you like Ben Stiller? I know we haven't really talked about him too much on the podcast.
It's real hit or miss with him. Like, I know I was never as into the Meet the Parents movies as other people were.
I like the first one.
Yeah, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Zoolander was kind of overrated.
I didn't like Zoolander.
I mean, even though Zoolander was kind of a cult hit, it wasn't even really like a hit in its time.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, like, drag a guy who's, like, way more rich and famous than me, but, like, you asked me the question. It sounds like you're kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, there's definitely still some Ben Stiller movies. Like, I actually find that I like him better if he's not a lead. If he's not, or I'll say it this way, if he's not, like, the main protagonist. Like, I still think White Goodman's hilarious in Dodgeball. Like, I think he's good as an over-the-top villain in a comedy. I don't like him being, like, the romantic lead. Like, I like the movie Along Came Polly because there's a lot of really good nuggets in there of humor. But I don't like, seeing Ben Stiller, like, land Jennifer Aniston after the girl from Will and Grace left him. I'm like, get out of here. That was, like, when I would watch... That was like when I would, I still watch Seinfeld all the time, sometimes at night just to, like, get, you know, ease me down to get ready for sleep. And I'm seeing, like, Jason Alexander, George Costanza just, like, landing these models. And I'm just like, what is, like, can you guys be a little realistic? I mean, come on. So seeing Ben Stiller, and I realize he has a Seinfeld connection with his dad, playing George's dad. But I don't dig him as a romantic lead, and or even a main protagonist, which for all intents and purposes he is in this movie. So I am hit or miss with him, and I think that's usually the tipping point. Like, I'll laugh at him all day in Happy Gilmore as the guy at the, you know, the old folks home, but him, you know, being a romantic lead and what was that fucking movie he did where he like married the girl and then realized she was horrible?
Oh,
like, that
Heartbreak
stuff.
Kid.
Heartbreak Kid, and then he, yeah, and then he finds the other hot chick and like wins up with her. I'm like, come on. That's ridiculous.
If you think I don't think we've done a movie with Michelle Monaghan in it, but Hollywood, there must be I mean, she's definitely a looker, no doubt, but like she was the actress that tied down Tom Cruise in the Mission Impossible franchise.
True.
And she was also in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. She was like the unrequited love interest of Robert Downey Jr. in him in that, which was kind of considered the start of his comeback.
Yeah. And I thought she was good in Source Code. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did not.
Yeah.
Is Jake Gyllenhaal in that?
That is Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
Yep. That was a very interesting movie too. I recommend it. Yeah, anyway, I know we're getting down a tangent, but we love doing that. But there's no women in this movie, so every once in a while we gotta talk about that.
Yeah, it's like there's the tit book, and then there's the girl for the lady from Community, and that's it.
That's it, folks. Yep. But yeah, Ben Stiller, hit or miss. Don't love him as a lead. I think that's where I'm landing on that. And again, like as a director, maybe hit or miss too. I don't know. But that's why I keep going back to the Keanu Reeves thing. I think, like, if this movie had him in that spot and then Ben Stiller in the McConaughey spot and keep everyone else the same, I think it may have been a bigger movie, box office-wise.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know, because as much as I like Keanu Reeves, I don't know if his, like, brand of it's not like he can't do comedy, because he can, but mm-hmm. I just don't know if his brand would have worked for something like this. Like with the ensemble cast or whatever. I'm having a hard time seeing it, but I'm also not that creative. So
I would say if you get Keanu Reeves in that role, just get rid of the fucking Jack Black character who apparently was based on Chris Farley, which is like such an insult to Chris Farley.
Oh my God. Like
if that's true, like don't say that.
You're not, dude, you're not lying. Like, come on. Like Chris Farley, on his like, I think on his worst
have people
day.
Forgotten? Yeah, have people forgotten Chris Farley? Like that's what, like people talk about Chris Farley all the time, and I think he's he's post-mortem underrated.
Yeah, but his whole like just going super over the top about his drugs and everything you really said it, man. Like that's really insulting to Chris Farley's memory. Like I know that's how he died. But yeah. And I know he liked to party, but at the same time, it's not like it seems kind of gratuitous a little bit. Like if that's supposed to be the basis for it and they took it that far, it's pretty disrespectful.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Black, I like Jack Black. I like Tenacious D. I like his sense of humor, and I like a lot of stuff he's been in, but he's no Chris Farley. So it's just like a very odd. If that's true, like, we don't know, but we just go by what we read. If that is true, that is absolutely wild. So I would jettison that character entirely, introduce a romance for Keanu Reeves, maybe get some ladies in the box in the theaters to watch it. Keep it funny, but sort of like how Hot Shots had the romance. You know what I mean? get a movable mole, do something like that. Have her, stick the landing, something like that. But
you're talking about Hot Shots Part 2 now.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah. I always mix those fucking two up. But I think that would be a good way to go. And I know a lot of times when we talk about these movies, we say like, oh, could you imagine? We go through the list of the alternate castings. Could you imagine this person as this? And this, I would say, is one of those situations where I definitely could. So beyond Ben Stiller, I'm realizing I'm not a Jay Baruchel fan. I thought the Jack Black character was shit. So and the Tom Cruise stuff, I was sort of over. So, and the Al Pacino thing, I was like, I was just like dealing with it. I wasn't like, I never thought that was all that funny, except when he it turned out he was gay with the tenor from NSYNC. But then it really becomes in my head now, as I'm checking all these, crossing all these names off, that this is Living or Dying by Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. The Al Pacino stuff was, I remember when that scene was coming up, I was getting a little worked up in my head, because I was like, are they really going to do this gay panic stuff, like, to the extreme? Because that seems a little hypocritical. But then it has one of the under the radar, like, biting lines in the movie, which is like another Robert Downey Jr. gem, where he's like, come on, man, it's Hollywood. We're all a little gay sometimes. Because at first he's acting, like, all panic. Like, he's like, Lance, what the fuck? And it's like, oh, are we going to go, like, full-blown gay panic? And then he, like, brings it back to, like, a more reasonable place. It's like, yeah, it's Hollywood. Everybody's a little gay sometimes. Like, that's a good line.
It is crazy because, like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I've seen the movie several times now, and I'm still, like, not seeing Robert Downey Jr. in that character. Like, he really becomes this other person entirely, and it's just so wild.
Yeah, and then they have the whole thing at the end where he's like, I'm the dude playing the other dude playing a dude, and he's actually doing
this. Disguised as another dude.
There's a lot of, like, meta references, because he's doing that in this movie. He's playing this Australian actor who's doing blackface, and then in one scene he's speaking Chinese and he's pretending he's a patty farmer, and he's like doing like just shifting all these gears, and it's all just working. It actually surprised me, I was like shocked that he got a nomination for this part, but then when you think about it, it's like he pretty much deserved it. But I mean, he lost to Heath Ledger that year. I mean, that just wasn't meant to be.
Game over. Yeah, no doubt about it. I read that, like, part of the, not shots they were taking, but part of the whole method acting thing was, you know, shots at maybe Daniel Day-Lewis and, you know, a few other people.
Right, yeah. All the leads in this were inspired, at least partially. Like, they said that Tug Speedman was supposed to be kind of a young Sylvester Stallone. Even though I don't think Stallone really had that whole, like, I'm alone. I think Stallone always had, like, a wife or a girlfriend or something. And he
also, like, his whole thing is this one franchise, The Scorcher.
Right.
And it just turns into a shit franchise after the first one. It's like, how can you then say this guy is supposed to be Stallone when Stallone had two massively successful franchises?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that you get away with it, the partially inspired. Like, yeah, you. And as far as the Kirk Lazarus character, he was Robert Downey Jr. said he was inspired by Colin Farrell, Russell Crowe, and Daniel Day-Lewis. Because the character was originally supposed to be Irish, but I guess Robert Downey Jr. was more comfortable busting out the Wayne Gale Australian accent from Natural Born Killers. So he chose to go that direction with it.
A very, like, odd slept-on quote from Robert Downey Jr., though, because that means he kept that accent, like, stable in his mind somewhere for, like, 14 years.
Yeah, or he just thought it'd be easier. Well, and it's a safer... I think for in general, like, I'm not great at accents, but I know that like 90% of the time when I try to do an English accent, it comes out Australian. So I think it's a lot easier for an American actor to emulate an Australian accent for whatever reason than an Irish accent. Because as we've seen over the years, I don't think I've ever seen a non-Irish actor. Well, I shouldn't say, because Brits probably do Irish pretty well, but American actors trying Irish accents is always like a fucking catastrophe. Like, Brad Pitt in The Devil's Own trying to do a Belfast accent. Now, his accent in Snatch, the Gypsy Traveler accent, apparently was spot on. And
not in the Devil's Own.
Yeah, not in The Devil's Own. And then, like Richard Gere.
I need my money, Tom.
I need that money, Tom. I'll say, yeah, that's so bad. Is that an H. Ford movie you don't like?
I fucking love that movie.
Oh, so you like the movie even though that accent's in it.
Yeah, anything. I'm hard-pressed to find a Harrison Ford movie I don't like.
6 days, 7 nights.
Fantastic.
Wow. That was like that was like my haymaker. I really don't have anything.
Dude, I even liked Hollywood Homicide.
That movie was weird. It had a weird ending.
Yeah. I just liked how the side plot was that he was like doing like real estate on the side.
Yeah, that they I think they stole that from the Bosch novels. Because Bosch's partner in that. Well, I don't know.
Oh,
if those
the Bosch novels.
What?
Yeah, the Bosch novels.
Well, Bosch
right.
was adapted into a TV show that was on Amazon for like 7 seasons.
Called Bosch,
yeah. And I think those novels were. I don't know if it was a coincidence, but in that, his partner is a real estate agent on the side.
Yeah.
So, fucking yeah, H4. So it's any H. Ford movie, huh? Just.
Well, I guess. I'm sure you'll find
what
one.
What about Regarding Henry? That just seems like a huge downer.
Written by J.J. Abrams. I like it. I'm a fan.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He plays a pizza delivery boy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we got down this H. Ford rabbit hole, and I don't remember where we were. Oh.
Harrison Ford should have played the Nick Nolte part. How about that?
You want to, dude, you want to talk about a brilliant meta bit? That was fantastic. Oh, man. Well done.
I liked the Nick Nolte role, and it was like, I don't know what year it happened, but it's like, the earliest I could think of is like that 2003 movie Hulk, that bad Hulk movie with Eric Bana.
Yeah.
Where Nick Nolte just goes off the rails in that movie, and his voice changed permanently for the rest of his life. And then from there, he was sort of like became like a Nick Nolte version of Gary Busey.
Kind of like what happened with Al Pacino after Son of a Woman.
Yes. People don't understand. Like, everyone tries to do their like Al Pacino impressions and stuff. I love when people do like a 1970s Al Pacino impression, like a really smooth crooning soft voice.
Yeah. A little nasal, but not like not overly so. Yeah. It's like.
Yeah. Oh, God. Can we do The Godfather again? We have to do part two. God damn.
Well, you got a pick coming up, so.
I know. Now I can't pick that.
You can do whatever you want, man.
I can do
whatever
I want.
Your fucking name's on the show.
God damn.
Do it bottomless. No one's going to know.
Do it, Doug. All right, so I've done a little too much roasting, so I do want to get into stuff that.
I don't think that's true. I just think that this movie, like. A lot of times when we do movies, I mean, they're absolute classics, and we both love them, and it's like a love fest. And there's like very, I think with this movie, it's actually a little, we're playing against type. We are the proverbial Tom Cruise right now, because we are not doing our usual shtick. Where I'm not like I know you're not saying it. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I just didn't like. There were things even when I was watching it this time around that I knew I thought were funny. When I watched it in the theater and on home video for years after,
me too.
That just didn't hit the same. Like the way Ben Stiller gesticulates during gunfights. Like, that shit was hilarious the first few times I saw it, and then it's like, then I'm watching it this time, and it's like, eh.
I will say I did laugh when he spots the camera as he's being walked into the prison camp. And he starts going more limp with his hands tied up above him. And he's like, like, I thought that was pretty funny. Because Ben Stiller, he is funny. Like, I'm not sitting here saying he's not funny. I just don't know that he should be the lead in a movie, you know? So I take with that what you will. But
yeah. I mean, I know he has been doing it for 30 years, but
you can't argue with, like, there's something about Mary, and like, he definitely really just exploded once he did that movie. So who am I to say? Like, the guy's had a hell of a long career, and he does do a lot of funny work, no doubt about it. Nepotism or not, he's a talented boy.
I'm kind of on a change of topic, but back to an old topic. I'm really glad you brought up the Nick Nolte part, because then that, you know, that opens it up for the whole, like, Danny McBride part, where I thought he was great in this, but it was a small part, so he got to just, you know, just kind of do his Danny McBride shtick, which is For me, it's usually welcome, but I know some people might wear a little thin.
Oh, I think, like, especially for, because I'm trying to look up, like, Eastbound and Down debuted in, like, 2009. And that's, I think, what, like, at least put him more on my radar.
Mm.
That movie where he plays, like, that sort of, like, has-been pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if everybody knows it or not, but... So this came out, like, the Tropic Thunder came out a year before that. And I know he's been in stuff around this time, too. But his, like, brand of humor was still, like, really fresh, right? Like, around this time. So I think he probably was, like, to coin a wrestling term, was over when this movie came out. Now people see it more like you were saying. It's the Danny McBride shtick. It's his thing. Being that, you know, sort of obnoxious, offensive, dumbass, sort of person. And it's, you know, it pays his mortgage or whatever. And I think he's really funny. So I thought he was good in it too. It's, I don't know about the Nick Nolte character. I do like that apparently, his introduction was, sort of like a salute to Robert Shaw's introduction in Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the back of the room and he's sort of like just listening to all the know nothings spouting off about, you know, how they can make this movie. And then he sort of chimes in. It's like very, you know, like we did Jaws when he scratches the chalkboard and he's like, I'll give you the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. So they were trying to go with that. But then when they twisted on you, because I forgot that, I was like, there's something weird about him. I forget what it is. And then his, like, his fake hands come off. And I'm like, oh, right. He was, you know, it's stolen valor. He was never, you know, in the military. So he wrote this book. And this is probably my favorite commentary on Hollywood, which is probably the least accurate. But so what they're telling us is this fucking guy wrote this book and nobody fact checked him. It became a bestseller. Then it gets option to become a major Hollywood movie. They don't look into it, and then they start producing it, and that's why it's that shitty first version we saw. It's because this guy was never in the military. All he did was write scenes from movies he liked, like being a wannabe soldier, and that's why it looks like Platoon and it looks like all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So he's really the one who's at fault for everything, because then they get themselves dropped into that real situation.
Yeah, that he knew nothing about. He was just kind of winging it. Like it was he'd never even been to Vietnam before, and
I've never been outside the States. He's like, what?
Coast Guard, Sanitation Division.
So he's just a fucking loser.
Yeah, and basically. it's another layer in this movie about how everybody's full of shit. Like the studio people are full of shit. The actors are full of shit. Like even the source material is full of shit.
Yeah. Oh, another funny bit I just thought of was the trailers at the beginning. I thought they were good. And they also, you know, a year after Death Proof, of course, which we already did on the podcast about, you know, fake trailers and all that stuff. I thought one of the funnier bits was five-time Academy Award winner Kirk Lazarus and one-time MTV Award nominated for Best Kiss, Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, and that was,
and they got actually Tobey Maguire, so that was good.
I didn't know this. That was some oblique reference to them playing gay lovers in this movie called Wonder Boys, which came out in the early 2000s.
They were in
that
with
Michael Douglas. A lot of that was
Michael Douglas.
A lot of that was filmed
in
Pittsburgh. My one friend who's interacted with us a few times. You met him. He's an extra in that movie.
Your one friend. Who, me? Sorry.
No, my buddy that is from Pittsburgh originally, and he's now he's in the New York area. That's where he developed his lifelong animus against Katie Holmes. Because apparently she was not nice to people who weren't stars on that set, according to him.
Oof.
Which doesn't really surprise me all that much, but
was she what year?
2000, like 99, 2000, I think they were filming that movie.
So that might be pre Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
And you, yeah. About Danny McBride, 2008, that was the same year Pineapple Express came out, which is another comedy that I remember fondly. And after watching this, I'm not sure I want to revisit it because I think maybe it's better left in my memory. Or as like with this movie, it still had its moments. It still was entertaining. I think there's parts of it that are sharply written. Mm-hmm. But I think I like it as an idea better than as a comedy film.
I think so too. Like this, you could easily see Tropic Thunder being a movie made based off of an absolute like hit of an SNL skit or something like sort of like MacGruber, you know?
MacGruber.
Because MacGruber's funny.
But dude, people slept on MacGruber because it's like one of those things that it on the surface it's so superficially bad, it's like you're afraid to give it a chance. Like, yeah. Like our friend Scooby loves MacGruber.
Yeah, MacGruber's funny, man. You have Val Kilmer in there too. As Kunth. I may have to add that to the list if it's not on our list. I think it is though.
That'll be in the flyer division. Well, our list isn't that sophisticated, but we should definitely have like the flyers out there. Like,
We should. We still have thought about doing full on roast. And takedowns. I know we have a trash list, the trash heap. But yeah. So, what's your take on the whole no women in the cast really?
I think it makes sense for the film production and
because
go ahead.
A lot of these movies like this. Like I think about, you know, Rambo 2 or, you know, Commando, you know, or Predator. There always seems to be a damsel element. And they could have played on that easily. Like, that could have been an easy, like, just source of, you know, laughs or jokes or whatever. And I'm just curious as to why they didn't go that route. Well, maybe because this is supposed to be more of, like, a platoon style.
I mean, do you think... that I know, like, so you mentioned the Nick Nolte introduction scene, and that was actually supposed to be more of a direct homage to Jaws. And they didn't do it because Ben Stiller thought that the movie was heavy enough with tribute shots to different things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was one element. When you think about it, too, one of the issues with this movie, I think, is the fact that you have an ensemble cast, and it's a lot to balance. Like that's true. So you throw a
good
woman
point.
In the mix, like a female lead, and it's it's way. I think it'd be way too busy. Or you know, your elegant solution, you know, just not have Jack Black in the movie, or Brandon T. Jackson. You know, I don't need him either. If we're
okay,
or if we're gonna be, you know, if we're gonna be mean and you know talk shit about people who you know do something that we don't do.
Right.
It's like when you yell at football players.
Exactly. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And we know it's ridiculous, but
it is to a certain extent, but it's also not ridiculous the state of preference. Like I don't know. I don't think like that wasn't where the comedy was in this movie. And I think if you did a random cross section of a lot of the people who would be goodly enough to listen to this podcast, I think the majority of them would agree.
Yeah. No, and that's what it's about though. Like that's the whole thing with movies. And there are people who say like, you know, what you're saying, but I know you're not saying that necessarily seriously, is like, just because you don't do it, you can't voice your opinion on it. Like this is entertainment. The whole point is they are trying to get our business.
Yeah, you're like, right, man. I mean, you're right. We're allowed to have an opinion, but at the same time, I just don't, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm like, you know, a voice from on high.
Oh, I know.
Talent, but no, I'm not.
Trust
saying,
me.
Don't
I,
worry about
I
it.
Get
I'm just
you.
That's my hang up, not yours. But
I get
no, you're
you.
Right yeah. though. I mean, it's show business. If you don't put out a show that people want to pay money to see, and Hollywood is seeing that with the shit they're putting out now.
Yeah. Like, no doubt about it.
I mean, even the movies that I really wanted to see in the theater, they either came and went faster than I could get there to see them, or I just like it was like Oppenheimer. It was like I just couldn't do it. Like, I just couldn't go to a theater and sit there for 3 hours and watch historical drama. Like, I just was not fucking up for it. I don't know why. I'm sure it was an excellent movie, and maybe I'll get around to watching it someday. But I don't know. It just, and I don't want this to turn into like a whole like referendum on, you know, back in our day. But you know, you made the comment about you were trying to gauge Tropic Thunder in like the level of comedy it's trying to bring, and that if other comedies are trying to do that. And when I think of a comedy that's been made in the last 10 years, all I think about are like these forgettable, like rom-com light bullshit things.
Yeah.
And it's not that, you know, like some people appreciate rom-coms more than others. And
I like rom-coms.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like, it's not that they don't have their place, but at the same time, if it seems like the majority of comedies are taking their cues from that because it's safe and it brings in the supposed female audience that like doesn't support anything except Barbie, like it doesn't make sense to me. But it's also because comedy is, we've mentioned this several times, it's not a very profound insight, but of all the like broad genres of film, comedy is probably the hardest, because if it's not funny, you have failed. There's really no other value that can be mined out of it. Like, you could make a bad action movie and people might find it's a comedy movie. Now, that's not what you intended, but if you make a comedy and it misses, like, I don't think this movie missed, and just to be clear, I don't think this movie missed at the time. And in the recent, like, and the first few years following it, I just think over time, it's easier to look at how the comedy hasn't, a lot of the comedic elements haven't aged as well. Some of those performances aren't really all that strong comedically. I don't know if I'm babbling or if this makes any sense.
No, I get what you're saying, because, you know, like the 2000s, it was like the Judd Apatow era. And it's like, you know, 40-year-old virgin comes out, and you know, he obviously ghost wrote Happy Gilmore. We talked about that on that podcast, which really, like, I think took him the people took it, started taking him seriously as a writer. But like all those Judd Apatow, like, and his crew, like all those, the Freaks and Geeks kids and stuff, like then you start getting the Knocked Up and 40-year-old virgin and all those movies come out, and they all have that same style of humor, which is like making fun of somebody using metaphors and riffing and a lot of heavy Jewish humor, of course, that style of humor that, like, you know, Larry David has or whatever. But I think that dates itself to that period of time. And I think when a lot of those comedies were coming out, sort of like how music, you know, like all of a sudden like grunge comes out and all these, you know, like Metallica tries to look like a grunge band on the Load cover. And it's like, people try to just gravitate toward what is winning at that time. And I think that goes for movies too. So I think a lot of the comedies around that time were trying to do a similar thing. And I think Tropic Thunder accidentally falls into that. And not because like one of Apatow's boys, Jay Baruchel's in it, and Danny McBride, who's also in a lot of his movies, that might be part of it, but it just has that sort of late 2000s feel to its humor. And for good or for bad, some people I know say this is one of their favorite comedies, and it still is. And hats off to you. We're not sitting here saying this is how it is. We're just saying how we think about it. Like, don't take my opinion and be like, oh, that fucks up my opinion of this movie. No, it doesn't. You're just listening to this podcast because for some dumb fucking reason, you were brought up poorly, and you want to hear my opinion about it.
All right. No, I mean, like, I was a little disappointed in myself that I just didn't find this more enjoyable. Like, I picked the movie. I've mentioned it at least in two other podcasts about how I thought.
So when you, just to be clear, when you picked it, you're like, this is gonna be a lot of fun. Like, you were not expecting to, because how many years had it been since your last viewing? Like, you weren't expecting it to be not up to what you thought.
Probably like 4 or 5.
Sometimes that'll do it. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, I don't know. It was like, I still thought, you know, I'm not going to repeat my points again, because I think people could write them down verbatim, but I kind of established what I thought the good points of the movie were and the stuff that was a lot flatter this time.
Yeah, I found myself looking for things that I didn't focus on the other times to, like, find a new, like, a freshness to laugh at. And for me, it was anytime Bill Hader was on screen, because I don't think I gave like as much attention to his performance like that time, because it was like Tom Cruise is doing the fucking Tom Cruise thing. And there's Bill Hader, who is 50 times funnier than Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, greatest action star, movie star of all time. Comedy, you're picking Bill Hader. And there he is, like, just not stealing scenes. But for me, I was like, you know, this is like, this is the newness I'm taking out of this rewatch for when other things maybe aren't hitting, like, you know, like I said, Jack Black and other shit that I may have laughed at 15 years ago. And maybe, Mike, you're saying it's us. Maybe when I was 25, when I watched, or well, I was 30 when I watched Tropic Thunder the first time, maybe it's different now that I'm 41. I don't know.
Yeah. What you were saying about that kind of comedic groove that they were in this decade, I'll tell you what, though, I would take that over what's going on right now, man. It's brutal.
I can't even name comedies. You're right in saying that. And I think I have a pretty strong ear to the ground. I like paying attention to what movies are being made and stuff. Like, dude, I just fucking saw, speaking of bad comedies, I finally saw the new Ghostbusters.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ.
And you liked Afterlife, right?
I did.
Because I never saw that either. I just...
Yeah, I would still put Afterlife third. But this movie was pretty fucking bad, dude. And it's like...
It was just even more of a soulless cash-in than Afterlife was.
Yeah, I think it was. Because even Bill Murray's parts, like... It's sort of that thing where... There's certain elements to a franchise that it's like if James Hetfield died, Metallica's fucking finished. But if Lars died and James wanted to keep going, they'd probably sound better live. And so when I think about the Ghostbusters, you know, Harold Ramis wrote the fucking thing. Ivan Reitman directed the first two. He helped his son direct the third one. So it was still had that feeling like before he died. But then this one, they hand the directing duties over to the guy who co-wrote Afterlife. Ramis, obviously still gone. And then Aykroyd is too old to be doing anything, writing-wise. So it's like these people who become filmmakers, they have their own little egos, and they were fans of it growing up. And they try to like think of making their version of Ghostbusters, but still having all the old shit in it. And it was just like, it was just really bad and like pissed me off. But and it pissed me off in the sense that I didn't want to not like it. I went into it like trying to like it. And that's what hurts me the most when I don't like a movie. Because sometimes I'll go into a movie without any expectations or wondering whether I'll like it or not. And if it's bad, I'm like, ah, all right, wasted 2 hours, whatever. But if I go into a movie hoping to like it and it's bad, those are the ones that sting the most. And they got to close the trap on Ghostbusters. It's finished. It is over. But my point, I guess, is one of our favorite comedies, maybe our favorite comedy podcast we've done was Ghostbusters. I think that was one of the more fun conversations we had.
Just long as shit, too. Just so...
but it was like we weren't trying to nibble at the rest of the meat on the bone.
No, it just that's how it turned out.
It was there. Yeah. It was there. And, you know, so I hold Ghostbusters at a high regard. And in this one, it was like they forgot that it's supposed to be a comedy. And so to bring it back to your point about recent movies and stuff, even like the reliance of sequels and reboots to do things and make money for movie studios isn't working now. Like Indiana Jones didn't do that great. The new Ghostbusters didn't do that great. And it's like, so even a sequel to an established comedy isn't funny. So how are we supposed to get people and studios to agree to have these people make actual funny original comedies and deliver, especially adding on the cherry on the sundae with the whole climate of everybody that, for whatever reason, likes to pretend that something upsets them.
Yeah, and so many of those writers, like so many of those great comedy writers were, you know, Jewish dudes or like...
Yes. Yeah.
Or like I don't know, I might make an ass out of myself to people interested in sociology, but I you know those are white guys, they're mostly straight white guys that were a lot of those great comedy writers, and I think a lot of what people are afraid to say. I mean, it's coming from there too. Like, it's, they don't, people are so terrified of losing everything they have and like falling out of favor, and it happens fast in that world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah, it does.
It's especially when, as we mentioned, it's like comedy is a high risk, high reward thing. Like, if you make a great comedy, it will live on forever. Like, I want you to show Ghostbusters to your kids. I want them to show it to their kids. Like, some of my other friends, like my one friend, his kid is already making Ghostbusters references. It's like, but
nice.
Like, think about any comedy that's been made in this millennium that approaches that level of iconic status. It's not even close. And I guess maybe that's part of the curve that we're looking at Tropic Thunder on, because it has been over a decade and a half since it was released, and it seems like it's harder to make comedies that don't become so dated.
That's yeah, I agree. I think that is certainly the biggest part of this. And then I was also thinking about, and not to like really just put my foot on him, but I was looking at Ben Stiller's like career as a director. And so his first major movie was Reality Bites in 1994. It's a comedy, small movie. And then Cable Guy. But Cable Guy, you know, Jim Carrey probably improvised so much shit in that movie that, you know, it says written by Ben Stiller, but you know, Jim Carrey puts so much on that.
Yeah, and
movie.
It was a huge story at the time for anyone who remembers. They paid Jim Carrey $20 million to be in that movie. So it's like,
oh, right.
If
that
he
was
shows
the one?
Up
yeah.
And he's like, I want to do it this way, what are you going to tell him? No.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
right.
Like, at the time,
yeah.
It was unheard of for a comedy actor to get that kind of money to be in a movie.
Oh, once, yeah, his trifecta from 94 just took him to those new heights. So good call on that, the first $20 million man, followed by Will Smith, I think. But then you got Zoolander, Tropic Thunder, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, Zoolander 2, and that's it. So it's also possible that, you know, Ben Stiller, funny guy, good comedic timing, funny on camera, maybe he's not necessarily the best comedic director. And I know filmmakers like to make themselves sound more important. We've talked about that than they are. But I think there is something to how comedies are edited and how they're shot that help make things funnier. And it's possible that Ben Stiller might not be able to capture comedy as well as he's able to perform it.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, this movie, like, when I look at it, it's, like you said, it's well shot. It's well put together. Like, it seems like the bad effect shots were bad intentionally.
Yeah.
Like, one
yeah.
of the other things that made me laugh was just, it was such a one-off thing, but is when they're shooting that big battle scene and it's all going wrong in the beginning, and that was going to be, like, the opening of the movie or whatever. And then Jack Black just hanging from the fucking, from the helicopter, just with like shooting an M16 one hand, and it just looked so phony. And it's like, this is going to be in a real war movie? It's fucking ridiculous. But when I was saying that this movie was dated, I'm not necessarily referring to, this is going to be a little abstract, so bear with me. I'm not really referring to topical punchlines or, yeah, the TiVo thing was a little weird. But
yeah.
I mean, like, to me, I kind of let that go because this movie had to come up with these mountain, not a molehill situations where they had to, you know, they had to kind of force these tiny things to make characters interact, like, or find each other.
But how the fuck did McConaughey get there?
Yeah, that's a huge plot hole. Also, like, how do they have enough footage to make a movie? Like,
he just
did they
rolls
have
up
fucking
on
cameras in the Flaming Dragon camp? Like, there's no way.
When did they actually film the dialogue scenes? Because they were just talking about being in a movie the whole time.
Yeah, those are the two. I'm glad you brought that up. Those are the two huge, like, you don't want to talk about plot holes with a comedy, but just to like wrap up my whole this whole abstract thing I'm trying to establish, it's more like the comedic energy of a lot of the performers just doesn't, it hasn't aged well. And I think it's when, like, and not to keep bringing it back to Ghostbusters, but I think it's been pretty well. Ghostbusters, in the opinion of at least this guy on this program, Ghostbusters might be the best comedy ever made. It might be. I don't know. But
that's fair.
But
that's
a lot of what happens in Ghostbusters is they're not playing for the cheap seats. They're not doing it broad. Everything's very understated. Not everything, but a lot of the humor is very understated. It's subtle. There's things that if you've seen the movie 20, 30 times, you didn't catch. And then you catch, same for me, the same scene. But in this movie, it's like Jack Black is playing just the biggest stereotype of a jonesing fat drug addict who has no control over his vices. And it's just like, just so out there. And we keep coming back to that a little bit, but that's what I mean. Yeah. Is that a little too weird? Like a little too out there? Like, you know what I mean? Or not really?
Yeah. I feel like Sam Kinison, when he would part of his shtick is when he would do the screaming and the blowouts and all that stuff. Like, I feel like that's all the Jack Black character did. Like, he didn't have any, like, even when he was supposed to be like calm down, it was just weird. Like, this guy's just like tweaking out on, you know, weaning off heroin and stuff like that. And like, he's reminding us as what was in his like gummy bears and stuff. Like, we know exactly, like, they beat that over our head so much. They're trying to sell us on that character. I thought it was just such a misfire of a character and a waste of time. And like, what range does Jack Black have to show to do that? And he just like act crazy, you know, in every scene, as crazy as you possibly can. Basically, that's what we want you to do. And then we're going to make the dumb decision to tell people in interviews that this was inspired by Chris Farley. It's like, the fuck are you doing?
You're right, man. Like, I mean, that's a great point. It's disrespectful. Like, it's like Chris Farley never had any talent. It's like,
but you're also setting yourself up for just complete failure. Like, it's like you writing a song with an acoustic guitar and being like, yeah, I was really inspired by, you know, Neil Young when I wrote this or something. And then you just sound like the Wes Scantlin playing about a girl from Puddle of Mud. And if you've ever heard that.
I haven't, but
now you need to experience my pain and you need to listen to
man,
that.
Man, you know, part of being a friend sometimes is like hiding the heinous shit that you stumble across. Like you share a lot of that stuff, but sometimes you got to pull it back. You got to be like I was going to tell one of my friends something the other day, some complete bullshit I stumbled across that I knew was going to piss him off / gross him out. And I go, no, you know what? I'm just not going to tell you this time. I'm just not going to do it.
All right, fine. Don't watch it. It's fine.
I'm going to watch.
Clenching his butthole the whole time. Trying to hit a key. Like, he can't hit Kurt Cobain's range. So anyway,
sick bird.
Yeah, what'd you think about the music they used in Tropic Thunder?
I thought that the music was, and again, I'm not trying to pile on, I thought the music was good at spoofing the Vietnam thing, but it wasn't really memorable for me. And mm-hmm. and then I'm talking about the score, and then of course they had to rehash all the fucking classics like Fortunate Son and
blah, Run blah, Through blah. The Jungle.
Yeah gotta do that. So it's almost like they were self-conscious about like the hackery that goes on in that genre, specifically the Vietnam films, like war films about Vietnam. It's like they can't get away from using the same 10 songs and everything.
Do you think, like John Fogerty probably didn't have to write another song after like 1971? Like the amount of times, because I believe at least now I think there was like legal stuff, but he like owns Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Uh-huh.
So like now any fucking movie that uses those songs, it's just like it's like rom-coms with Peter Gabriel's or Pete Townsend's Salisbury Hill. Every fucking rom-com trailer has that, either that or Friday I'm in Love by The Cure. It's like there's certain songs that are used over and over, and you're right, military stuff, and not even indirect military stuff like Forrest Gump and stuff. You're getting credence in there because when you hear credence, if you're trying to like, if you're trying to showcase us Vietnam and you put credence on, you're getting to the 50 yard line. Like you're already at the 50 yard line. Then you just need some like very distinct looking trees and a lot of green.
Yeah, you need some triple canopy jungle. You need some standing water.
Right.
You need some huts. Right. You need some straw hats.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're
underground
in the red zone.
Tunnels. This... Underground tunnels.
Yeah.
Series of interconnected tunnels.
Is John Fogerty still with us, or did he cross over to the Shadow Realm?
He's still here.
So he's still getting... Can you imagine that dude's like just like taking his shit, and then he just gets another royalty check for somebody using Fortunate Son in some fucking horseshit miniseries? It's like he just opens his check for like 12 grand while he's like sitting on a gold toilet, and he's like, he's just like shaking his head kind of, and then he just like sets the check over.
Yeah, Fogarty's so old, so he still gets physical checks sent to him for the royalties. And he's like in the middle of dyeing his hair dark brown again, and he's got like that clear like head thing that women wear when they dye their hair, and he's walking out in slippers to the mailbox to get his royalty check for like $8 because it featured in an episode of MASH.
Right before he gets there, he's yelling at his fucking butler. He's like, I thought I told you to get the chestnut brown.
Chestnut brown.
And then he just opens the check, just fucking looks at it, he's just shaking his head like...
No, he signs it and endorses it over to his butler.
I'm sorry about that, Daniel. He just hands him the check.
He's like, Daniel, today, you're the fortunate son.
Because it ain't me.
It ain't me. But I'll be looking out my back door when you're mowing the grass later today.
I'll be that dude looking out that back door.
Fucking looking out that back door.
That's not Vietnam, but it's just credence. I don't know.
No, yeah, it's credence. I just said that. I said looking out my back door.
You did, man. I'm a fucking hack. All right, well.
I mean, it's a good song. I don't mind listening to it twice.
We talked about the Matthew McConaughey part a little bit, how that was originally supposed to be Ben Stiller, and that it was supposed to be Owen Wilson when he decided he was going to step out. But Owen Wilson.
Oh.
He had an incident where he tried to kill himself, so I guess he needed a break.
Which is crazy, because did we talk about that on our Wedding Crashers?
I'm not sure if we brought it up or not. I don't know if it came up organically, because it was before that, but Wedding Crashers was before that.
Right. Yeah, but he, like, at the end of the movie, he's like reading like anti-suicide books, and you know, just kind of crazy how like a couple years later he just went through some like total just utter darkness. It's wild. Owen Wilson also, you know, I like Owen Wilson. I think he's funny. But if he's in this movie in that role instead of McConaughey, then I feel like it really 2008's the shit out of this movie.
Also, the thing about Owen Wilson that like about his personality, and this, you know, people go through things and it's like you don't really want to make fun of him or anything, but with Owen Wilson, it's like his whole shtick. He's like, you know, I'm just this happy-go-lucky guy. You know, like I'm just this guy from Texas, and I do movies with my brother. Wow. And then he tries to top himself, but then like a guy like Vincent Price never fucking would. Like it would, like Christopher Lee would never think about killing himself.
Right.
But Owen Wilson did apparently, or tried to, but. I don't want to dwell on that. That's you know, fucking like not great to talk about.
Yeah, like Robert Smith, you know, writing all those sad songs for 50 years and just looking worse every year.
What Robert Smith will always have is he's like one of the two guys that Trey Parker and Matt Stone didn't make fun of.
Like, yeah, I mean.
Like, he'll always have that.
Yeah, Robert Smith's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But I like Matthew McConaughey in this part. He had that, like. He had that slick, superficial charm of, like, the non-friend friend. He was, like, the perfect, like, guy to be. He's like, yeah, I'll be, like, I'm friends with you enough to take 10%.
Right.
Plus, right. I think this was kind of, I'm really fascinated with that part of Matthew McConaughey's career where it just seemed like for 10 years he just didn't give a shit. Like, he was just doing, He didn't care what the public thought of the movies he did. He didn't care what the critics thought. He was just doing
fool's gold. Yeah.
And then then he did this movie, and I don't think this is really where it all started. I think when it came a few years later when he did Killer Joe, because that's what people really... And then he did The Lincoln Lawyer, I think, in between that, these. But I think this was kind of the ember. It wasn't the exact start, but it was kind of like the ramping up of him taking his career a little more seriously.
Yeah, yeah, because I think he won the Oscar in 2014, mm-hmm. which is about, you know, six years after this. Interesting. And you wouldn't call this a cameo necessarily, but you almost think of it that way because McConaughey is just such a big star. Like when you have like a big star like McConaughey, because he was already like, he had peaks and valleys in his career, you know, in the 90s, he had this ascension and then it probably came down a little bit, went back up. And like you were saying, then he takes himself seriously. But when you see an actor of that big of a like star power, like an A-list star in a small role in a movie, it almost feels like a cameo. But he does have plenty of dialogue and scenes in this movie. So I don't know if you ever think of it that way, but anytime I see like a big star in like a very small role in a movie, I find that interesting, and I often like it, but I'm like, it feels like they weren't in the movie as long as they were.
Right. Yeah. It's I think he did this movie, I think, because of the whole Owen Wilson thing. I guess he was a mutual friend of his and Ben Stiller's, and he kind of just like stepped up to do the part. I mean, I'm more fascinated with the, you know, Tom Cruise doing this, because at the time... I mean, at the time, he'd had some bad PR because of the whole Oprah thing and the interview with Matt Lauer and, you know, people. But I think this was another thing where, you know, he always had the Mission Impossible franchise. So we can't pretend that, like, that Tom Cruise was, you know, ever, like, his career was ever in trouble. Like, I think that would be massively overstating it. But I think his image had taken kind of a hit. And then he does this movie where he does something completely different than anyone has ever seen over the past 25 years he's been doing films. And people respond, you know, I know I responded really well at the time to it. I still do. But like, I don't know, like, not to be too dramatic about the whole, but I think this movie has some cultural relevance in that it kind of took some huge actors now. And I think it's not like the launch, but I think it's like the pre-launch. Is that a little too trivial, or I don't know?
No, I think that's fair. I was looking at where the Mission Impossibles were. So this Tropic Thunder came 2 years after Mission Impossible 3, which people view as sort of a comeback for the franchise after the John Woo version, Mission Impossible 2. But yeah, so Valkyrie came out in 2008, and then before that, War of the Worlds in 2005, which I didn't think was very good.
I don't know anybody who's seen that. Besides,
yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't like it very much.
I definitely haven't heard anybody ever talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. It sort of came and went. I think people thought it was going to be a bigger deal because it was directed by Spielberg. But, you know, Spielberg, Tom Cruise, you figure it's got to be a hit. You know, you harken back to, you know, Minority Report. You know, that's a big, big time movie for the two of them.
It seems like it might be one of like the cinematic equivalent of like how, you know, how NCIS was like the number one show on television for like five mm-hmm. or 6 years, but you don't know anybody who watches NCIS. So who's watching it?
Yeah. Same thing with the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And Young Sheldon. I'm like, who's watching these that you're doing a spinoff of one of the characters from the show, like a kid version? Like, who is watching this? I literally don't know anybody who watches Young Sheldon, but it's like the most watched show.
Well, it's because like part of it, I think it's a little more sophisticated now, but back in the, you know, at least up until about 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I'm not sure what the exact date is, but you know, you're doing Nielsen families. So you have to scout these people that match a demographic profile to represent the demographic profile of a metropolitan area. And then, so you're basically basing, like, say you were doing it for Cleveland and, you know, there's, like, let's just say there's 1.5 million people in the Cleveland metropolitan area, which might be a little high, might be a little low, like, I'm not 100% sure, but then you have 1,000 families that represent that demographic profile, and it's people who generally have the time and the inclination to do some things like this, because doing media research is, it's never worth the money they give you. It's always more time. It's always more of a hassle. But so your sample's always going to be kind of skewed that way, because the people, like, people who might actually offer, like, a really interesting kind of cutting edge viewing perspective, they're never going to take the time to do anything like that.
Right.
Well, now we have streaming analytics, which is, like, a totally different thing. It's like doing the shit in real time.
Yeah, even that seems like, what does this all mean? You know, I think they're not even sure. Like, the streaming stuff is pretty volatile and wild, and they seem to all be pairing up again because they're not getting the individual returns they were looking for. So it's going to be the war of the bundles now. So we'll see, you know, who wins that out, because I heard Netflix is going to be merging in a package with Peacock and Apple.
Yeah, and then Hulu's doing Max and Disney, right?
Yeah. And it's like, I love Disney, obviously, for Star Wars and the old movies, and my kids watch Disney. But then, like, Apple seems to be the one churning out the best original programming. Netflix is, I've always had Netflix. So it's, you know, you got to all of a sudden start making these decisions. But anyway, how many people watched Tropic Thunder? How'd that do?
It did 195.
195
against the $92 million budget. So it,
yeah.
So
depending on marketing costs, yeah, it
made a modest profit, but then I think it probably pulled more in rentals and sales than, as we often reference, but it has to be discussed because it's more of a business factor. So they still took a pretty big swing, you know, a comedy with a $92 million budget, even though the cast is loaded. So.
True.
There's that.
True.
And it's not like they really skimped on production value. Like I was saying, I kind of took a few more shots than typical on a film that especially one I picked. But I think this movie, the effects were great, except I think of the spots where they weren't supposed to be great.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at other movies around the time, like Wedding Crashers cost $40 million. The Hangover cost $35 million. Like, you're right. It's such a good call. That is an expensive comedy. And I know we've talked about expensive comedies before, and there certainly have been, but for something that's not a sequel, you know, that's probably one of the higher budgets, if not the highest, for a comedy. And it's because it's an action comedy, and there has a lot of explosions and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I like I said, I had fun watching Tropic Thunder, and it's not like, oh, I'm never going to watch that again. But I think going into it, I was expecting to enjoy it more than I did, because up until recently, I remember liking it and laughing at it. So, and I still laughed at some parts, but it maybe just didn't hit me the way I thought it would. It was a bit, and it sounds like we're both in sort of the same boat there. So I'm curious what our audience thinks. Like, I wonder if this is going to be one of the episodes of the podcast where, like, man, I can't believe those two assholes have just gotten so crotchety that they don't like Tropic Thunder.
No, I mean, it was a pretty unpleasant surprise. I wasn't expecting it. And,
yeah,
you know, I did the whole thing talking about, you know, one of our listeners writing in and talking about it. And I was like, man, I'm sorry it went that way. I'll have to see what happens when I look at it. And it was like, I mean, the movie did a lot of things well, and I think it's well made, and I think from it's very sharp satirically, and as you mentioned, the kind of meta references and then the fake trailers, very immersive. But I think it's just kind of undercut by some underwhelming performances from the principal cast, with the exception of Robert Downey Jr., that haven't aged very well.
Yeah, yeah, that's certainly it, man. Like, It's a weird movie in that there are a lot of people I like that I think this is some of their worst stuff. Like, you, maybe a bit more bullish on Jack Black than I am, but I thought it was a stinker for him, you know, in this role. And like we talked about, you know, Wise and all that. We don't need to keep rehashing that point of it. But then, like I said, Jay Baruchel, never a big fan. Ben Stiller, hit or miss. I'm realizing as we talk about this more and more, I don't like him in the lead. So then I'm still like whittling down the cast here, and there's nothing superficial for me to look at. And then you got Robert Downey Jr. And I think my concluding thought is that if this movie didn't have Robert Downey Jr. and they had someone else in that role, who knows if they pull it off. Maybe it's just as successful, but he really like is 90% of what made this movie work.
Yeah, I don't even know who else they talk to for that part, because you know how usually when you look at some of these movies, it's like they talk to every swinging dick in Hollywood for this part. And this one, it was like they made it seem like he was the only choice. And apparently he told Ben Stiller when he read the script, he thought it was the stupidest thing he'd ever read. And Stiller's retort was, "I know, isn't it great?" And then somehow he ended up doing the movie. I don't know.
Now, did this film around the same time as Iron Man or after
the
it?
So the shoot for this, I think, was like 13 weeks. They shot it in Hawaii, which was, you know, not bad as far as gigs go. But I think with Iron Man, the only way that could have worked was Iron Man was already in the can and it had a shitload of post-production. So it was probably in post while Robert Downey Jr. was filming this. I mean, I could be totally wrong. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I think Iron Man filmed for 4 months from like March to July, and this must have been after. I mean, that's such an interesting year for Robert Downey Jr. You know, he essentially completely resurrects his career with Favreau, launches the MCU, which becomes the biggest movie franchise in history, while at the same time being in this weird comedy. And he gets nominated for this. It's just, what? I mean, at 43 years old, it's just like such, like that is a win. Like what a turnaround for Robert Downey Jr. Like, I bet there's people, not even I bet, I know there's people who have no idea that there's like videos of him in like prison jumpsuits in like the mid 1990s because of his drug addictions and stuff. Like, they probably don't even know that that part of Robert Downey Jr.'s story exists, and that he's been in interviews that I've seen that get really uncomfortable where people start digging at him about his past and his relationship with his dad, and he has to like walk off these interviews
and
stuff.
Yeah, he just walks
because... Yeah, it's just... The Robert Downey Jr. story is very interesting, and I know without looking at our list, there's probably going to be other movies of his we're going to get to down the line, but I've always been a fan of his, you know, and I like a comeback. We talked about that when we did the, you know, Rocky. But like Iron Man is my favorite MCU movie, the first one. And I know, and I'm a Favreau fan too, so that's definitely part of it. But I mean, RDJ just a good actor, and he just feels like he can do any type of movie. And I've never really seen a role like this, and it's definitely. It will, no matter how worse or better this movie ends up aging, whether that's for us or our audience or anybody, I feel like at least that performance, because there's been plenty of movies that were never good, but you're like, but that guy was so good in that role of whatever. And that could end up being this. Like, I don't think anyone who doesn't like Tropic Thunder would have anything necessarily bad to say about how good Robert Downey Jr. was in the movie.
Yeah. Like, or I like to call it the Anna Faris treatment. They said that about her for like 4 or 5 years. The movies she was in sucked, but she was like the best part of them. I did pop a lot when I did think it was funny when he did the when they had the dummied up paparazzi footage and he's just chugging a bottle of Cuervo naked on a fucking balcony.
Yeah, the trailers were funny at the beginning, and I think I like when I did my rewatch for this, I was laughing at those. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. And it's almost like they started so hot with the trailers that it was hard for them to keep carrying it. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be it, because the trailers did such a great job of lampooning. They went straight from lampooning the blockbuster to the like up its own ass art house movie
To the Oscar baiting, yeah.
To the fucking, like, the shitty comedy where where one actor plays eight characters in different fat suits.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And it did all that very well. I mean, that's part of the reason I think, like I kept saying, I think the movie's smartly written. It's just, for whatever reason, the performance, like, I already said it, but it's just, like, I don't think the writing was the movie's problem, for the most part.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm with you. Still a funny movie, and, you know, I hope we didn't bum anybody out who came into this podcast expecting us to, you know, glorify it. But I still had fun with it. It just wasn't as good as I remember.
Yeah, I know one effect this had on me is I was going to revisit Pineapple Express, and I don't think I'm going to do that now. Because I had a pretty strong opinion about that, and it's the same. It's kind of that same vibe of comedy, came out around the same time. I think a lot of that shit is not gonna affect me the same way it did when I was watching it initially.
And now that you say that, because I'm thinking about, you know, like Seth Rogen and, you know, James Franco, who is he's trying to make a comeback, but it's like Seth Rogen easily could have been slotted into the Jack Black character here and nothing would have fucking changed.
I don't know. Do you think it would have improved marginally or no?
No. What would have improved was the banter probably between him and Jay Baruchel, just because they worked together so long and they're friends. That may have been different. Maybe they add more scenes between them or something like that, because they are improvisational, that group. But I guess that's just me again taking a shot at that character, which I just think that the whole Jeff, even the name, like Jeff Portnoy, like, was this fucking Barstool Sports?
El Presidente.
Yeah. Yeah. One slight, everybody knows the rules, and it's don't say your fucking shitty character is based on Chris Farley. I'll turn this bus around right now. Oh shit! I'm out. I don't have anything.
Yeah,
else
I think that that kind of brings it to a conclusion. Sorry if we repeated the same points. If you're a big Tropic Thunder fan, we're fans of the movie too. We're just, in closing, I think it just didn't age as well as we would have hoped on a rewatch, which does happen periodically on this fine program.
Remember how devastated we were about Batman Returns? And
I think I blocked that out. I don't know.
Wayne's World.
Yeah, Wayne's World. Well,
that stung.
Yeah, Wayne's World was a lot of talking about Dana Carvey and Rob Lowe. It was a lot of that, I think.
We've soured a little on Mike Myers.
All right, yeah. So what are we doing to get this train back on the tracks, man? What stumbled through that ruggedly aged, handsome brain of yours?
Ooh, thank you, Mike.
Distinguished, wow. Even.
Oh, I'm going to go upstairs and wake my wife up.
Or don't.
No. Yeah. 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 No, we got to do a Point Break.
All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I didn't want to, you know, stand on ceremony and get theatrical with the reveal there, but I talked about it earlier and said, we got to do that movie. And I know we're going to do it. And I think us talking more about Keanu Reeves doing action stuff, I know we had a lot of fun talking about Speed and The Matrix, and I think we'll have a really fun time talking about Point Break, but I have seen that recently, and I enjoyed it, so I'm not, for our listeners who are a little upset by this episode, at least for me, I don't think you're going to get that when I'm talking about that movie, so.
I make no guarantees.
Give me two, P2. Give me two. All right. Anything else, buddy?
No, man. Take us home.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody, as always, for listening. If you know somebody who likes the type of movies we talk about, we have seen people on social media hit us up saying, like, oh, I just started listening, and you talk about the movies I love, and that's exactly what this is all about. So for that person, thank you. And if you have friends or colleagues, coworkers, classmates who also like to riff about those types of movies, just shoot them a link or tell them to look up Just Like the Movies on any podcast app, and away we go. So thanks for that. But yeah, from me and Mike here at Just Like the Movies, until next time, where we talk about Point Break, should be in about 2 weeks. Make sure you all be kind, rewind, relax, and see you around.
I'm gonna rip your fucking tits out.